whether they had big heads or not, they were imitating the gods with these big, high headgear. So, let's get down to it, shall we? Let's get down to it. So I then started thinking, okay, extraterrestrials, gods, interbreeding bloodlines. And I wasn't really thinking, what did they look like? Because your initial thought is, well, they must have looked like us then. And then I started on about 18 months ago, an amazing series of coincidences all over the world. People were coming up to me and telling me how they had seen people, overwhelmingly in positions of power, though not always, turn in front of their eyes into a reptilian humanoid figure and then go back again. And of course you hear one and you think, ooh. And you hear two and you think, oh my God, back burner. You hear three, you hear four, you hear five, you hear six in different countries. 7, 8, 10, 20, 30. On my website, davidicke.com, there's 3,000 web pages now, and there's a whole area called the Reptilian Archive where people put their ancient and modern knowledge, research, and experiences, if you want to see how much there is to support some of this stuff. And so the story went that in 15 days, in one period, I met 12 separate people in 12 separate places who told me of this experience. Now, they were from many, many different walks of life. And I'm thinking, ooh, on the back burner. But I'll watch for this. This is strange. I then go to England, and I meet someone who I was due to meet to tell me about satanic ritual, which is fundamentally connected to this, as you'll see this afternoon. She was the wife of the head keeper of a place called Burnham Beeches, which is owned by the City of London, which is the epicenter of operational Illuminati control. And it's a forest area with a few clearings. And because she was the wife of the warden, and she says, my husband was a Satanist. That's why he got the job, because of the Satanism the elite did on that Burnham Beeches area at night. She said, and one day, she said, I'm walking through the forest, and I saw a light. She said, and I went through to see what the light was, and she said, I saw a satanic circle where all the usual horrors were going on. And she said, I was astonished to see that the man I was looking at conducting it was Ted Heath. Now, Ted Heath was the Prime Minister of Britain between 1970 and 74, and was the man that took us into the European Community, now Union. And she talked about one of his Chancellor of the Exchequer at the time, Anthony Barber, was next to him in this circle. And she explained what happened and all that stuff. And so I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing stuff. Anyway, we talk about it. And then I'm just finishing the conversation. I'm putting my cup of tea down. Thank you very much. I've just come back from America in this experience of 15 days. And I just threw away a line at her. I said, do you know, it's a bloody strange experience. I keep meeting people that have seen people turn into reptiles. And I turned to go. And I heard this, like that. I turned around. She's having a bloody seizure. She said, oh my God. She said, I thought it was only me. She said, oh my God, I wasn't going to tell you that bit. And she explains how she saw this guy, Ted Heath, during this circle, turn, shapeshift into a reptilian humanoid figure. And she said, you know the thing that fazed me most? No one else in the circle seemed at all bothered, as if it was the most natural thing in the world. I then get invited to go to the House of Lords to meet some lords, to talk about the conspiracy, which they know is going on. They just want to talk to me about it. And there was a woman there, and she was saying some very interesting things about Diana, you know, Diana, Prince of Wales and stuff, Princess of Wales. And after the meeting, I said to her, hey, I want to talk to you. We've got to talk. She says, we have. I said, how do you know this about Diana? She says, well, my closest friend was Diana's closest confidant for 9 years. She says, I think I can get her to talk to you. So we talked. I talked with this lady. I didn't go to see this confidant of Diana to talk about shape-shifting reptiles. I'm hoping this thing might go out of my life and just kind of, you know, be a strange phase. Because, I mean, do I want to stand up and say about reptiles? Well, I don't really bother, but I'd rather not. Anyway, we're talking, and she's telling me about the horrific things that happened to Diana in relation to the Windsors, and how the Windsors take people out and stuff like that. Anyway, she then says to me, do you know what Diana's nickname for the Windsors was? I said, no, go on. She said, the reptiles and the lizards. And she said, Diana used to say to me, in all seriousness, they're not human. And she said, You know the Windsors are a reptilian bloodline. And I'm thinking, not a friggin' nother. And she explained, because this lady is a healer, and she worked not only with Diana, but with other members of the aristocracy and the lower levels of the royal family. And she picked up a heck of a lot of knowledge in this. It's amazing how many people know about this. It doesn't go out in the public arena, because, I mean, who's going to have the guts to stand up on a stage and say that reptiles run the world? I mean, who's going to do it? No one's ever going to do it. We're never going to find out, are we? So this went on and on and on. If you look in the reptilian archive of my website, you'll see just the constantly added stuff. The number of people that have had this experience blows me away. And the name that comes up more than any other, George Bush. There's a book by a lady called Kathy O'Brien, and she sees this as a holographic image. But when you put it together with all the other evidence, maybe there's another explanation here. She wrote this book in the early 1990s, before I was into any of this stuff. And when this started coming into my life, I thought, hold on a minute. I'm sure I read something about reptiles in that book. So I'm flicking through it, thinking, feeling a right prat, looking for reptiles in the index. There it was, about four references. And she talked about how George Bush had told her that they were an extraterrestrial race that had taken over the planet. No one knew it because they looked human. And how he turned into a reptile in front of her. Now, of course, understandably, in these mind control projects, you think, oh, well, you know, it's a holographic image. It can't be actually literally true. But when you get this other stuff, suddenly it takes on a different light. She also talked about being with a guy called Miguel de la Madrid, who was president of Mexico during the Bush years. And she tells at some greater length in the book how Miguel de la Madrid told her the story of what he called the iguana race. He told her that an extraterrestrial race of reptilian origin came to the earth and needed bodies, as he put it, to work through, to operate through. And how they interbred with the ancient Mexican people, because this happened all over the world, creating hybrid bloodlines, and that these bloodlines could take either human or reptilian form. And to quote her own book, he added, perfect for world leaders. And more recently, I've met more and more people who have come from the inside and said, the reptilians are behind the Illuminati. And it's interesting that when you go back, as I did, I thought, well, you know, time as we know it, a few thousand years, is actually nothing in truth. So if it's happening now, there must be references to it in the ancient world. Well, if you're looking for references to a serpent race, serpent people, snake people, it's absolutely friggin' enormous in the ancient world. And one example, the Nagas, the gods of the ancient Indus Valley, they said about them they could take either human or reptilian form. And it kind of sounds kind of amazing, but I was watching a film the other day, and someone said on that film, the difference between an ape and a human is 3% DNA. You know, And as I think it was Carl Sagan said, there are more potential combinations of DNA than there are atoms in the universe. This is the only humanoid form that's going to exist and evolve from that enormous infinity. Come on. And who dominated this planet for so long? The reptilian genetic stream. And I'm not seeking to demonize that. I'm just talking about one group that keeps coming up. I mean, the reptilians are just the reptilian genetic form is a genetic form. So what? I'm talking about one group within it. And we have a reptilian brain. The scientists call it the R complex, R for reptilian. And they say, interestingly, that from the R complex, we get the traits of obsession with ritual, not just like sacrificing people, but going to the supermarket at the same time every week. Oh, it's Friday, we've got to have fish. Why don't you have fish on Thursday? You know, be exciting, you know. Ritual, ritual, ritual. And as you'll see as we go through the day, the Illuminati are stunningly, breathtakingly obsessed with ritual. The R complex, the reptilian part of our brain, also produces, the scientists say, the concentration and the obsession with top-down hierarchical power over structures. The pyramids. And also, it's from, they say, that part of the brain that we get what we call cold-blooded behavior, being able to do things to people by being emotionally detached from the consequences of what you are creating for them. When I talk to a guy who's come out of the Montauk Mind Control Project, they call them Montauk Boys, there's been a lot of books written about this in recent years. He talked to me about this reptilian thing recently. And he makes speeches and does talks at conferences about DNA now. And I don't know, I'm not an expert on DNA, I'll just give this for information, make of it what you will. What he says happened, and is happening, is that this fusion of mammal genes with the reptilian genes, the hybrid, created a situation in which they could open reptilian DNA codes, close them, open mammal DNA codes, and close them. And they could switch between the two. What he's saying is that the DNA has open codes, which manifest as a physical expression characteristic, and they have closed codes, which are dormant. And if these dormant codes open, or these other codes open, then they manifest a different characteristic. I didn't know this. But you know, there are still people on this planet being born with tails. They call them in the trade causal appendages. When it happens in the Western world, they just whip them off and sort it, when they're babies. But in the third world, where they don't have that medical expertise, there are still people walking around with tails, because a DNA code that would manifest as that characteristic, which should remain closed in this point of our body's evolution, has in that one person opened, and it's created a characteristic. And he talks about how these particular bloodlines, and there are very few at this level, who can move between the two and open and close codes. And for some reason, drinking human blood, particularly the blood of blonde-haired, blue-eyed people, seems to be very beneficial to holding mammal codes open, so that the reptilian ones don't manifest in the world around us, which will bring us later into why, when you follow these bloodlines from the ancient world to now, the obsession with blood drinking, satanic rituals, follows them everywhere. Now, when I started looking at this, I started scanning around, and someone sent me this. This is from a temple in Egypt, an ancient piece of artwork. And what you've got are the ancient Egyptians lining up here to give a gift, an offering, sheep and stuff, to their god. And when you get to the end of the line and you see what the god looks like, well, it's kind of very strange. It's not what you think the god would look like. And when I started scanning around, there's not that many absolutely literal depictions of reptilian figures, reptilian gods, but there are some. What Credo Mutwa told me is that the Chitahuri, which incidentally in Black African translates as the children of the serpent, the children of the python, which is what they call these bloodlines, he said because they were reptilian, they said, as I said earlier, never depict us as we really look. So the symbolism of the snake, the symbolism of the serpent, became depictions of the gods. But you can find some. This figurine and others of a reptilian humanoid figure with a reptilian kind of baby figure were found in graves in the Ubaid culture, which was in the same area that later became the Sumer culture that I mentioned earlier. China, where a lot of this interbreeding appears to have gone on in the ancient world, of course their whole culture is based on the dragon, which is another symbol, it seems, of these reptilian gods from the ancient world. Now, what I did, when I got some of these people together who had seen this shape-shifting situation, and I said, I got them together with an artist, and I said, depict through this artist what you see when this shape-shifting goes on. Another person who talks about this is a lady who conducted sacrificial rituals for some of these people, including the British royal family. And she confirmed exactly, with indeed more detail, what Diana's confidant was saying about the Windsors shape-shifting in the way that I'm talking about. Now, these nodules on their head are something that come up again and again with such consistency that it's just amazing, and you'll see more confirmation of that in a second. And this is these are also kind of depictions of what people see when suddenly the mammal, the human form disappears, and suddenly they're looking at something else. Talk about freak you out. In fact, someone was telling me backstage just before I came on about a couple of friends of theirs who are like big guys and really grounded and into none of this stuff, who had exactly this experience, completely freaked them. And that was in Vancouver. Now, when I said to Credo Mutwa, what do this Chitahuri look like? He said, I'll show you, because he's an artist. And we went down this rough track to where he paints, and he said, that's what the Chitahuri look like. In fact, there are many genetic streams, but that's one of them. The eyes are something that constantly get described. The glowing yellow eyes get constantly described by people who see this phenomena. And indeed, when you go back into the ancient world, you see the same depictions. So what I said to Credo, or what I did with Credo, was immediately get hold of a television crew and spend hours interviewing him to get this stuff down. I'm just going to show you a little clip. It lasts about 6 minutes of this man. He's the most incredibly articulate, brilliant man, telling information he has never spoken about publicly before, not least because he thought people would think he was mad. So let's play the video. The question I asked him was, Credo, what did this Chitahuri, the children of the serpent, look like?
This is how a Chitahuri looks like. It stands about 11 feet high. It is a very slender being, which seems not to have a bone structure. Its fingers have no joints. They are more as if the bones in here were flexible. Some of the Chitahuri have got three claws with a thumb. Some have got six claws with a thumb. And some of the Chitahuris have got horns on their heads. And what surprises me is this. Some film producers, like the producers who make the film Star Wars, often show creatures in their films which actually exist, which even the most uneducated of Africans who knows this Chitahuri can identify. For example, in the new Star Wars film, what is it called? Star Wars or something like that, there is a creature who amazes me called Darth Maul. Darth Maul is a red and black being with a ring of small horns right round his head. That is exactly what the Chitahuri look like. Some have got ordinary heads without any horns on their heads. These are the lesser Chitahuri, but the royal Chitahuri have got a ring of sharp horns all around their heads, and the very high Chitahuri, like their king, Mubaba Samahongo, they have got very long horns which grow this way, not that way like a bull, but this way, like certain antelopes. Now, I just wonder, where these film producers get their information from. And in one strange film, which my student called me to come and watch, was the thing called Stargate 2. And in that feelings, there was a creature, a very slimy, cream-colored creature with heavy wrinkles on its face. It was a spitting likeness of Mubaba Samahongo, the terrible emperor of the Chitauri.
Well, clearly there's a tremendous amount of knowledge of what's been going on and what is going on, which comes out symbolically through films and areas of communication like Hollywood. But the thing that I'm totally stunned the more I talk to you about this is because I've been all over the world having people give me descriptions of seeing reptilian type figures, particularly people in positions of power in the world, changing into a reptilian figure and coming back again. And what they describe seeing is exactly what the knowledge of ancient Africa talks about seeing. We're talking about the same people there, which is an astonishing confirmation. And the eyes is something that keeps coming up being described. Yes. Tell me about the eyes of the Chitauri.
Say, a warrior Chitauri has got eyes like a snake. These eyes are yellowish with split pupils and they glow in darkness. So if a Chitauri, a warrior Chitauri, one of the lesser classes, is hiding in a cave, you can see its eyes burning. But a royal Chitauri has got three eyes. It's got the yellow eyes, which glow in a strange, almost ice-like way, like jewels, like certain types of yellow jewel. And then they have got an eye in the center of their foreheads, an eye which doesn't close up down like a normal eye does, but which closes from side to side and which opens this way. Now this eye of the Chitauri is the eye that kills, because it can knock a man down just by the fire, the glare that comes out of it.
Is this where the a constant recurring theme of the evil eye comes from?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. In fact, Mr. David, I would like to share a little thing with you. It is this. The best way to protect an evil thing is to deny its existence. And if you talk about things such as the Chitauri, if you talk about things such as the Mandinda, there are many people who say to you, rubbish, this thing does not exist. Now, in this way, this great evil is protected by being denied. One day in my long travels through the world, I was in New York in that place called Harlem. And I saw a graffito on a wall along a passage. And the graffito was, there is no such a thing as the mafia, and we will kill any asshole who says that there is. In this, again and again, in America, people deny the existence of the mafia, and by denying it, actually protect it wittingly or unwittingly. There are those who deny that a national and international conspiracy exists. They deny it ferociously, but by denying it, they are actually assisting it and actually protecting it. We must stop denying the existence of these things. We must stop saying that there are no Chitauri, that there are no aliens, that there are no Illuminati. There are.
Okay. He's an amazing man, and for those who seem to indicate from what they've said about me this week that by definition, if you talk of a global conspiracy, you are a far-right Nazi, maybe those people might ponder on this after hearing those words. Credo Mutwa had his son murdered, his house burnt down, and his body battered to the point of death for opposing the racist apartheid regime in South Africa. And what those that have their sweeping definitions and their lack of brain cell activity are saying is that he, as you've just heard, must therefore be a far-right racist Nazi. The ludicrous of it takes the breath away. Now, one of the other things that people see is this kind of ethereal type, reptilian type figure, which locks in, again, it comes up again, into these lower levels, these lower chakras, and almost like, as we've had repeated throughout history, people get possessed by this consciousness and starts taking over their thinking processes. This is an interesting painting where a guy was trying to depict a race trapped in a time-space dimension, which they couldn't get out of. And interestingly, he chose reptiles to depict that race. And again, one of the things that comes up is that somehow, at least part of this reptilian situation, is reptilians on another dimension, the fourth dimension, very close to this. And of course, like all dimensions, occupying the same space, like radio frequencies and television frequencies, who are manipulating this dimension by working through physical bodies. And that's an interesting depiction that he made of that. Another thing that comes up is the Draco star constellation, again and again and again. And it's interesting when you see the writers and the artists, how they depict truth in symbolic terms and so-called fictional terms. We have Count Dracula. And when you look at the stories of Count Dracula, you're looking at the recurring themes that surround these reptilian figures, from the royal elite, supposed to come from Draco, according to the stuff I keep getting from various people. And the word draconian sums up the Illuminati magnificently. And Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula, was a high initiate of this very network, who, like many others who've written books depicting truth as fiction, had access to what was really going on. You'll see as we go through, if you reflect on the day, how all these different elements of Dracula in the story come back in the stories of this Chitahuri. Even the depiction of the devil, the classic depiction of the devil, fits many of the descriptions of these reptilian figures. The other thing that Credo talks about is the connection between these reptilian bloodlines and ancient Egypt. And one of the things he talks about is that some of these Chitahuri have almost like a cartilage-type growth, especially the much older ones. They seem to live much longer than we do in physical bodies. And it grows from the chin and starts to curl under, which is interesting when you see the constant depictions of that in ancient Egypt. And from what people who've taken part in these Illuminati satanic rituals tell me is that some of the garb they wear sometimes has that on, depicting exactly that, because they're crackers about symbolism. Now, as we get through the afternoon and we start to look at how this reflects in our everyday life and tell the story of how we've got to where we are from these ancient times, we can see that the epicenter at operational level of the Illuminati today in their manipulation of the planet is in London, the city of London. Nothing to do with Tony Blair's government, although that Prime Minister Tony Blair is a fundamental puppet for the Illuminati. It's to do with the fact that the center of the secret society Illuminati network is epicentered in London, for reasons we'll get to as the day unfolds. And when you go around the city of London, the reptilian symbolism, and these guys are seriously into symbolism, is enormous. When you enter the city of London even, you have to pass flying reptile figures on both sides of the road. All around you see these things. This is the City of London crest. I took this actually in Burnham Beaches, that area of satanic activity which they own. And again, the flying reptile comes up. It's a constantly recurring theme. And this one is at a key point in London where there are more